You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Jamal Adams has never gotten it and continues to just talk about the Jets when we have all moved on. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN, also on Twitter, at Chris Carlin. By all means, join us over there as well. And we, of course, are on the video stream at ESPN New York's Twitter handle, ESPN NY987's Twitter handle, and, of course, ESPN New York's Facebook page, where you can leave comments, you can chime in, you can do all of it, you can see the visual, because that is something you need. I really had never planned on speaking about Jamal Adams, frankly, ever again, unless he somehow ended up with the Giants or something down the line. That was the day he got traded, you know, after that happened. I think we've talked about him three or four times since then. And the reason why we have is because Jamal won't stop talking about the Jets.
He's one of the most.
He just won't stop talking about the Jets. I don't understand why Jamal Adams won't stop talking about the Jets. And there is a remarkably frustrating, angering, and stupid angle to all of this. In case you missed it, Jamal went on a podcast that's hosted by Patrick Peterson and Brian McFadden, a couple of defensive backs, McFadden being a former DB, and aired it all out about his time with the Jets. And when I say he aired it all out, we're talking about 13 consecutive minutes during which he did not stop talking about the situation. Here is a brief sample of Jamal Adams from, what is it called? All Things Covered? What is that? What's the name of the podcast, Brian Munguia? All Things Covered. Witty for defensive backfield, I guess. But, you know, good name, good podcast, and credit to them because they got the interview with Jamal. And here's 50 seconds of a bizarre 13-minute dissertation.
Man, we finished 7-9, right? And we came into the locker room. Everybody was happy, clapping it up. And it was just like, what do I really want? Can I stand this again? Because, bro, I fought depression in New York, bro. And I'm manning up.
Really?
I fought depression, bro.
Wow.
Oh, but there was so many, there's been so many times to where I've came home after a loss, a tough loss, and just sat in my room, bro, in the dark. No phone, no TV. And Pops would walk in and be like, hey, man, you all right? He hated to see me like that. It killed my pop so much, come to find out. He was calling my agent at the time and saying, hey, man, I don't like seeing my son like this. I need him out of this situation. So it got so bad to where it took a toll on my life outside of football to where I had to make a move. I had to get out of there because I knew what I wanted, and I wanted to win. It was like, man, they do not want to win.
So he talked about that quite a bit, but yet, throughout the entire 13 minutes, he kept interspersing the whole idea about getting paid, that it was all the Jets that wanted to pay him. You know, we understand, we know what the story was, that they told him they wanted to make a Jet for life, and that later on he felt disrespected, and I understand that. Players seek their motivation out of disrespect, and Jamal, of course, mentioned that later on in this interview. But there were so many things about it that were frustrating. Number one would be Jamal's equating depression with what he was dealing with. Now, I want to be clear. I'm someone that has dealt with depression and mental illness before. Members of my family have. Many, many people, millions of people across this country have dealt with depression. What Jamal is talking about is not depression. There's a difference between sadness and depression. You can sit in your room in the dark after games, after losing a game, and feel bad and feel down and not be happy. That's fine. Depression is something that has you questioning everything, including about yourself, and it is not miraculously cured by getting traded. what Jamal is talking about in depression, and he may not know any better. So I'm not in, frankly, in the mindset of cutting him a little bit of slack, but in that case, maybe he just doesn't know what it is, okay? What Jamal was feeling was down, which is something that every human alive feels at one point or another. It has nothing to do with depression. And frankly, that's insulting to those who do deal with it on a regular basis. Secondly, Jamal continued throughout to discuss about how this was never about him getting paid, yet he kept bringing up not getting paid. In fact, on at least three different occasions, said that the Jets, you know, were a bad football team, but he'd continue to be there and he would have stayed if they would have paid him. Does anyone doubt for 1 second that Jamal Adams would still be here if the Jets had decided to give him a contract after last season? Was it really all that bad, Jamal, that the money would not have even solved the problem? Well, no, because he admitted it on at least three different occasions, he would have stayed. So when he says things like they just didn't want to win, what it translates to is they just didn't want to pay me and other people. And so if that's the case, you got what you wanted. And he even admitted, I had to go to extremes to get what I wanted. And what I wanted was out. I didn't want to be there anymore because they had not shown me the money. Oh, depression magically cured as you go to Seattle. And this is what it's supposed to be like and all that. You know, we all understand that things have been bad for a long time with the New York Jets. We don't need Jamal to point it out once again after he's been gone for about 6 months or whatever it is now at this point. It's over with. When are you moving on? Because everybody else has. It was never about winning. It was never about winning. It was about getting paid. Jamal was upset about not winning and not getting paid. He wasn't just upset about not winning. Let's be clear. Those are two entirely different things. Money can help a lot of people make their way through a bad situation. And Jamal was clearly going to be more than okay with staying with what he thought was such an awful situation, yet, as long as he was getting paid, he could deal with it. I can tell you that there have been many, many instances of people I know where they have not been happy, but they have been getting paid, and that is how they justify staying through it. There's nothing wrong with that. If that's your ultimate goal, that's fine. But don't try to repaint history like it was something that it actually was. The Jets may have screwed up in their communication to Jamal's camp, but this idea that somehow it would have been all just fine if they had paid him, and they'd be winning right now if they had paid him. Are you high? Seriously, where does that come from? Because that's completely insane. Completely insane. And Jamal even said at one point that he had his agent tell him that after they made the trade, Joe Douglas told the agent, that they weren't going to pay him until 2022 anyway. Can I ask you a question? What GM in their right mind is ever going to say that to an agent who they're going to have to deal with again at some point, establishing something that would make them not credible? No GM would ever do that. That would be a remarkably dumb thing to do. So what I don't understand is this. Jamal's so much happier in Seattle now. But he spent 15 minutes straight today being completely 100% rather 100% reliving his entire Jet existence. Is it about motivation? Is it about disrespect? What's it about at this point? Are you going to be saying the same things about Seattle if they decide not to pay you? Because the last time I checked, the Seahawks have the worst pass defense in the entire National Football League. The worst. Remember how people said that Jamal can't cover? Turns out, pretty accurate. Pretty accurate. A liability in coverage? Yeah. They have the worst by a mile to the tune of 40 yards per game worse. They're giving up 353 yards a game passing. Last year, they were a little bit better. They were 7 or 8 spots better, but they were actually 90 yards per game better than they are this year. And Jamal, if you want to take it into analytics, has been rated as the 57th best safety this season. That's a 5-7 in the National Football League. You know, I've flipped him on a couple of times, and every time I see him in coverage, he's getting smoked like a cheap cigar. So if Jamal is that much happier now, shut up. Stop reliving the past. Shut up. I understand sometimes the past can be difficult to let go of. But when you continue to talk about it publicly, and you continue to say how bad it was, and you continue to complain about the fact that they didn't pay you in the middle of a pandemic, and that they didn't want to win, and that was most important to you, even though you would have happily stayed through the losing had they come up with the money. Jamal Adams is a fraud. He's a charlatan. And frankly, he shouldn't be listened to anymore. We tried all to move on, yet somehow, since he's been traded, he's talked about how bad the Jets situation was for him on at least 3 different occasions, and they couldn't even stop him from talking about it today if they tried. Not that they would want to, because he's just absolutely saying one more inflammatory word after another. Dude, mind your business. And right now your business should be stopping somebody. Because nobody's doing that in Seattle. You might be 6-3. Nobody thinks you're winning a damn thing. And the defense is the reason why. You know, the cancel culture thing, I could easily go in on Jamal on this depression thing. I think, honestly, he doesn't know better. It's frustrating to me because, as I said, listen, put it in layman's terms. I'm screwed up in the head. Fair. But I've dealt with it, and I've seen family members deal with it on a much more debilitating level than me. And there are millions of people in the world that have dealt with depression. Don't take depression and use that for your purposes here. What you were was sad after the game. At least understand the difference between the two. But again, I don't expect him to be somehow knowledgeable in that scenario. You know, because that's not depression. Just go look up what depression is versus what, you know, feeling blue is. It's a little different. 800-919-3776. Let's hit the phones. Let's get to them. Let's go with Greg in New Jersey up first tonight. Greg, you're on 98.7 ESPN. What do you got, dude?
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good. I like your work.
Thank you.
Chris, I couldn't, agree more. Couldn't agree.
You're breaking up on me, man.
Am I okay there?
A little bit better.
Okay. Anyway, needless to say, I couldn't agree more with you. He's a malcontent. That's the word for Jamal Adams. Malcontent. You understand?
Yeah.
He's just the guy that really just says stuff out of his mouth. He doesn't even know what he's saying. And guess what? If he was with the Jets, what he said sat out with 3 games with the Seahawks this year so far? 3 games or 4 games?
Yeah.
Guess what? He would have milked it for 6-7 with the Jets. So malcontent is the word. Thank you, brother.
Okay, I appreciate it. And listen, it's a lot of different things. It's not just malcontent. It's somebody that constantly has to search for motivation out of disrespect. And I don't have a problem with that. You know, I mean, for Pete's sake, the greatest of all time, and Michael Jordan admitted he could take any little piece of anything and feel disrespected by it. And frankly, I get it. You look for whatever the edge is. This is different than that. This is, I can't let go of the past. I can't let go of what happened and how poorly they treated me. God, they made me the 6th overall pick in the draft. So awful. Got to play in the biggest market in the world. The worst. And because they didn't handle your contract situation right, you came home and they're losing games and they're not where they need to be. Like, what exactly was going to happen, Jamal, that was going to turn it into an incredibly positive winning situation overnight? Like, you're talking about finishing 7-9 last year, and there was a group of guys that was actually feeling good about the fact that they had played better down the stretch of the season. And I respect the fact that 7-9 is not something you consider good. That's great. But instead of trying to help fix the situation, it was, let me get the hell out of here. You're not the first, you're not the last. Just stop. We have all moved on from you until, again, today. And what would make me think that you're not going to talk about them again at some point? There is nothing that would make me think that's the case. James in Spring Valley is next. 98.7 ESPN. James, what's going on, dude? How are you?
Good, Carlin. How's everything? I'm glad. Thank you for taking my call. And as someone who battles depression, hearing Jamal's comments makes me angry. First of all, I'm not even a Jet fan. I'm a Giant fan. And hearing those comments make me upset. Like, just admit that, you know what? I'm upset. The team didn't pay me. You know, and then move on. But this dude is such a – this dude just talks about the Jets like an ex still misses their lover. Like, it's embarrassing. It's truly upsetting. And to use the word depression for people like me who actually deal with it, it's infuriating and it's insulting. Just say that I was not happy because I didn't get paid. Now I'm in a better situation in Seattle, and that's that. And keep it
moving. I could have easily gone in and just destroyed him on that alone. I think in Jamal's mind, that's parsing words. He doesn't understand depression versus unhappiness. And frankly, that's one of the biggest issues in this country when it comes to dealing with that, that there is a complete lack of understanding about mental illness. And this illustrates that. I'm not going to sit there and destroy him on that. I don't like it. It is insulting. He should get himself educated on it, because it doesn't get solved when you get handed a bag of money.
Money doesn't solve anything. And quickly, before I go, I just want to say thank you for taking my call, and you're doing a great job, man. Keep up the good work, and thank you again so much.
I appreciate that, James. Thanks for checking in. Jarved from down under in Australia on the video feed, the live stream. Unhappiness is not depression. No, it is not. It is not. Popo checking in. He's an elite player. The front office screwed up big time on this one. He's a box defender. Of course, his coverage is bad in the end. I'm still going to stick this one to the Jets. Like, You're wrong. They got a treasure trove of picks for him back, and it is only going to help in the rebuilding process. Great. He's a box safety who can rush the passer every once in a while. Their defense is worse. Is worse with him there. It's worse. Who would pay him? Why would you pay him? What is he doing to make you a better team? Explain that to me. Stopping a run? It's a passing league. Rush the passer? Go get a few sacks? Okay. He is the 57th rated safety at his position this year. 5'7". There are 64 starting safeties in the NFL. He wants to be paid like a franchise player, which he also talked about in there. And somehow does not understand that you have to actually produce to get money. That's how it works in the NFL. Ira in Staten Island. Ira, I thought after he was gone that we wouldn't hear about it again, but it's been 3 or 4 times now.
Yeah, you know, Chris, you're so right, and I'm so sick of it. And I'm going to go out of character if you give me an extra second or two tonight. You know, so everything you said, you know what, Greg Williams covered him up because of his lack of coverage skills last year. They had to play him up on the line because he was a liability in coverage, all right? Listen, he has the heart, okay? He leaves it all out on the field. But guess what? He's a me guy. He's not a team guy. And the first day I met him, okay, before he ever stepped a foot on a practice field for the New York Jets, I had him pegged. I knew he would never sign a second contract, and I knew he would force his way out of here because I'm a pretty good guy with judging character, and I had him pegged from a mile away. And you know what? He's never going to be happy. Thank goodness, okay, that they didn't give him a huge contract. Because this team, you're right, it would have been worse. Could you imagine Jamal Adams on the Jets at 0-9? What would be going on right here, right now?
It would be, making the situation infinitely worse.
It would be awful. And like you said, what's he, 57th ranked safety right now?
57th. Okay, he's got his sacks, and that's fine. But, you know, he's still not playing well this year. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, how about that whiff on that touchdown that he gave up on the other day? Now, I get it. Okay, maybe his groin's bothering him, but he backed off on that play.
Yeah, you know, I saw something about his safety or his shoulder or something. All I know is it was a horrible look. And I don't want to be too hard on an injured player, but if you're on the field, you're on the field. You go make the play or you shouldn't be out there. That's it.
That's right. Marty Lyons played with 2 shoulder harnesses in the playoffs. I forgot what year it was because he had 2 bum shoulders, but he played and you would never know it. You know, and maybe Jamal Adams should take a look at a guy like Marty Lyons, and then maybe he could fix the rest of his career. Yeah, I got to run this by you real quick.
Yeah.
Donald, it looks like he's going to miss the next 2 games. You got 5 games left in my books, okay? I think it's worth the investment to sit him out the rest of the year, because of trade value.
Yeah.
Or it works out where if you can't draft a quarterback, if you have to bring him back, you want him to be healthy. I think in 4 or 5 games, it's not going to determine what you see out of Sam because I think, you know, the book is written right now, and I think, you know, an extra couple of games this year is not going to make a difference.
Ira, I agree wholeheartedly, and thanks for the call. I don't understand what is to be gained by playing Sam Darnold another down the rest of the season. And you might say, well, we can find out about him. You're not going to find out a damn thing about him because you're the same folks who have been complaining that he doesn't have anything to work with. Okay, so he's got his full complement of starting receivers. They're still not world beaters. You know, Mims is still a rookie. Crowder has been very good. You look at the rest. I mean, what exactly makes you think that somehow that Darnold is going to magically get better over the last 3 games of the year and prove that he's not the guy? No. They need to keep him healthy. They need to make sure that he is still going to be valued on the trade market. And if they can get a 2 and a 5, I think it would be fantastic. I have thought all along, I did not think that they would get more than a 3rd and a 5th maybe. But hey, if they get a 2nd-round pick, they did a phenomenal job. And even if they are in a situation where Trevor Lawrence doesn't want to be here, I'm all about Justin Fields, guys. I'm good on either one. Let's see here. Irish Mike, this is about Jamal. I took so much heat for hating that blank day two of his career. I knew he was a narcissist. That kills me. Everyone that blanks on him now told me I was dying on a blanking mountain. Well, get up on that mountain and scream, big dog. You got it. Today is your day. Let's see here. Any others worth getting to? I should probably look at them in advance, huh? Let's see if we can try that. Calls next, 800-919-3776. Let us check in with Sal in Brooklyn. Sal, what's going on?
What up, C? How are you?
Good, Sal. How you doing, brother?
All right, cool. Thank you very much. Hey, you know, it was every Jet fan under the sun. If it was 50-50 that was defending this guy as well, and of course everybody's going to jump off the wagon right now, but this guy was trouble from jump. And like Ira said, he was covered by Williams putting him in positions where he really wasn't exposed as much as he was. And it was like that old movie Shaft in the 70s. He let his mouth get his backside in trouble a little bit. You know, too much talking and not enough play on the field. So, you know what, Jamal? Get the Jets and New York out of your vocabulary. Go do what you're doing. Keep yelling with your coach on the sideline, or Super Bowl winning coach at that. And then take your problems to Seattle, because you know what? New York is tired of you, and do your thing. But as far as Sam Darnold, I'll be honest with you, here's where we disagree a little bit. Mm. If he's healthy enough to play, I mean, I know you're trying to hide him. You got to play him, because game is not practice. And it's just if it's
no,
game,
it's not. Game, but game, if the Jets are going to have the number one overall pick, Sam's not going to be here next year. And Sam has not stayed healthy. There is not a need to run him back out there and get him hurt again if you're trying to trade him this offseason.
Okay, but if he's not going to play, everybody knows what they got. But what if? It's the old what if game, because you're going to pick a quarterback regardless. What if one of those two games that he comes back for, he really shows something with some kids and puts up like a 275-yard day?
I'll tell you what.
No, that's all
that
I'm saying.
To me
he's not
would be,
play him anyway.
That to me would be the equivalent, and thanks for the call, of watching somebody in September in baseball and tearing it up when it doesn't matter. You know, that's why I had such an issue with the Jets making such a big deal about how well they finished last year. Because, yeah, they played great in the second half of the year. They started the year 1-7 or 1-8, whatever it was. And, okay, they played good down the stretch of the year, but it didn't matter at that point. They finished 6-2, and you felt like you had some things to build on, but turns out you really didn't. So I don't understand where that would make you think that you're going to be able to look at Sam and evaluate him properly over the last three games of the year when you haven't, presumably, won a game yet. No. You have to protect the asset. That's what that is. You have to make sure that a team like the 49ers is going to be interested in trading for Sam. They should be. I still think Sam can be a good quarterback in this league. But if the Jets have an opportunity to get a second-round pick and a fifth-round pick, and even if the second-round pick is next year, whatever it is, you have to go and do it and add as you continue to try to build. They have a ton of flexibility to work with here. They really do. Joe in Colonia is next. Joe, what's going on, dude?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
You know what? I thought I knew you, but I did not know that you or family members fought depression.
Sure. Oh, yeah. And, absolutely.
And I just want to say, you know, I've been listening to you from the IMUS and all those days. And a few people I work with do listen to your show, and I'm going to say something now that nobody knows. But I take medication, and I see someone once, you know, a few times a month for depression. And your show helps me through it.
I really appreciate that, Joe. And anybody willing to talk about it, to me, is really doing
right.
And I'm not patting myself on the back here. I'm patting you on the back here because it's the single most misunderstood illness that we have. And it's still to a degree, it's getting more, I don't even want to say the word accepted, understood, I think is a better word, because it's not so much about people just telling you to be tough and toughen up and get through it. You know, it's not that.
And like I said, a few guys I work with listen to your show. Mm-hmm. They have no idea, and I'm sure they'll talk to me tomorrow about it. But like I
Joe,
said, I'm going to thank
you. You're a brave guy for saying and it, and I give you credit.
Thank you, and I want to thank you and the gentleman that answers the phones. And when I call, I always try to make myself the butt of all jokes, because if I can make someone laugh, that helps me through it. And I just want to thank you for, you know, sharing your, you know, what you went through and what I could say to you. And once again, just thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
No problem, Joe. As always, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for checking in. Appreciate that. It is getting more recognized. It is getting more understood because more people are talking about it, and that needs to happen. And listen, that's why I'm hesitant to come down on Jamal. I could easily just spend 15 minutes obliterating him and putting him into the cancel culture type mentality to the point where, I mean, if you want to, you can make this a viral moment. If I'm going to be that guy, I'm not going to be that guy in this instance, because I just don't think he was understanding what he was doing in equating the two. Depression is not being upset after losing games. It's not depression. But Jamal, and a lot of people don't know the difference between what depression and feeling every day sad is. Depression, the best way it was ever explained to me, and I'll get off it after this, because we do want to do what we do, and that's have fun and sit in the sandbox and talk about sports. But if you ever want to think about it, there are two ways it's been described to me. If you want to understand what depression is. Depression is sitting in a chair, and if somebody told you that a magic pill was sitting right in front of you on a table and would solve all of your problems with it, and you would instantly feel better, you still wouldn't reach over to get it because of what's going on in your mind. Because of the chemical issues that are there too. Think about that. It's sitting right in front of you, and you wouldn't reach to grab it. The other way it's been described to me is equating it with a physical injury. Just simply imagine trying to run a marathon with a broken leg. Can't do it. There are a lot of days where that feels like trying to run a marathon with a broken leg. So, apparently, the Washington Wizards wanted to get in on Russell Westbrook as well. And what did they bring up? They brought up the idea of sending John Wall to the Rockets for Westbrook. Look, if that's what the best scenario is going to be, and the Knicks don't make a trade to go get him, I just think we're out of our minds here. First of all, if you're the Rockets, why would you ever make that deal? You know, I mean, John Wall is nowhere near the player he should have been. And that's a complete waste of time. $38 million for John Wall. That's how much he's making. John Wall is making $41 million this coming year, $44 million, and then 47. So basically, it's horrible contract for horrible contract. There is no way in hell the Houston Rockets are going to make that trade. And folks, I don't care. I'm going to keep pounding this drum, because every day I do what we call a self-evaluation after shows. I honestly look at things like, was there somebody who could have convinced me otherwise today in one of my stances? What am I missing? Is there a piece of information that I could have used to my benefit that I didn't have that would have better made me aware of a situation. And I've done that a lot. Call it self-scouting as a talk show host. Over the last few days, I've looked a lot at Russell Westbrook. What am I missing? Yeah, he was hurt at the end of this past season, whatever this past season was. I look at this guy, and I still see an incredibly talented player who is not at an age that is remarkably prohibitive. Think about this for a second. Chris Paul, you wanted to add here as a guy who's 35 and making an ungodly amount of money. You were ready to bring him in, and I like Chris Paul. But let's be fair, there's not a lot of tread left on the tire. So he goes to Phoenix, where coincidentally, it's a place that they needed somebody who was ready to help younger players go win. The Knicks don't have Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. They don't have these players. They have RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson. So when that's the case, Paul ends up in the right place. And if you're saying that Leon Rose wanted him to be here, to be that guy, I mean, let's be fair about something here. Chris Paul is not at a juncture in his career where he should be coming to a team that doesn't have a chance to win right away. Why would you do that? You wouldn't. You would bring him to a place where he can guide younger players who are incredibly talented. Now, the combination of Paul, Ayton, and Devin Booker is a pretty damn good one. And it changes the dynamic right away for the Phoenix Suns. That's great for them. Chris Paul here would not have fit. Not in the least. It would have been a situation where, yes, he would have been a good teammate. He would have gone and, you know, tried to help tutor those guys along, the younger players. Maybe he would have had a positive influence in some way on Kevin Knox and started to try to get the best out of him. But in no way would Chris Paul have changed the fortunes of the Knicks in the medium term. He really wouldn't have done it in the short term because there wouldn't have been enough around him. And in the medium term, let's be fair, how much is left? How much is really left for Chris Paul at this point? He's made an absolute fortune. He's under contract at $44 million after this coming season. He's 35 years old. He's been in the league for 15 years. Good. He's somewhere else. Russell Westbrook is 32. He could go out there again and average a triple-double, folks. He had his best scoring year this past year. The Knicks would need him to be a scorer. Russell Westbrook makes the Knicks an exciting player, or a more exciting team. Not an overly exciting team, but a more exciting team. Certainly a more interesting team. And if you're going to sit there and say, well, what are we going to do? Just go back and try to be a 35-win team? You know what? What has being a 22-win team gotten you so far? Not a damn thing. Remember the playoffs? Remember what that was like? Westbrook can actually turn this into a situation where other players want to come here and want to try to win with him here. And I know that you could sit there and talk about how players haven't wanted to come and play with him before and how it fell apart in Houston. He's the one that wanted out in Houston. Do me a favor. When you get a minute, go check out the Athletic story on how it all fell apart in Houston between Westbrook and Harden. And yeah, I keep hearing they're still the best of friends. That's great. I was really worried about their personal relationship. Just read about how it fell apart and why it fell apart. And granted, it feels like a somewhat one-sided story, but if the majority of it is accurate, I'm good bringing them here. I'm fine with it. Someone who's going to demand accountability, I'm supposed to be against that? That's just remarkably silly. Remarkably silly. I get it. They didn't get anywhere in the playoffs when he was in OKC the last few years. I understand. I know how it all fell apart. Is that all on him? Every mellow defender that's out there. Every time I attacked him for that, you say, oh, it's not all his fault. There's nobody to play with. Westbrook is an infinitely better player. Infinitely better player than Carmelo Anthony ever was. This is not another mellow situation. This is still bringing in a player who, while Melo was in his prime to a degree still, this guy is, he's just better in his prime. He's more exciting. He's somebody that immediately gives you credibility. Remember what credibility used to look like? That was fun. God, look at the last 20 years. And you want to be content to sit and watch R.J. Barrett develop and Mitchell Robinson develop when it's pretty clear we know what they're not and they're not going to be these guys? We don't think they're going to be these guys. Do you think R.J. is going to be a star in the league? I think he's going to be a very good player when he tops out. I think Mitchell Robinson's going to be a very good athletic center when he tops out. They haven't gotten there yet. There is nothing about either one of them that makes me think superstar, franchise player. Nope, don't see it. The Knicks actually have to have one of those, and they can bring one in without completely destroying their salary cap. What is unattractive about that? You can afford to do this and still do more. And maybe he has an effect on these other players where they get better. And maybe somebody else wants to go play with him at the Garden. And the next thing you know, the Knicks are actually relevant one more time. What a nice little change of pace that would be. It's been a while. I won't understand it. I really won't. And I got to tell you the best part about it. The fashion. If you know me, you know I am a bit of a fashion connoisseur. Fashion week, busiest week of the year for me. And I'm looking at some of these Westbrook outfits and I'm thinking, you make that into 2X? And if you're a slim fit, okay, I'll go to the 3X if we have to. But, you know, if you do, maybe we're looking at that. Excitement. Remember what that was? It was fun. He brings excitement. RJ Young is a host down in Oklahoma, and you'll hear him on ESPN Radio occasionally. I did a show with him a few weeks ago on the weekend. And every time I hear Thunderstruck, I can't stop thinking about Varsity Blues, right? RJ, God, I respect this so much, wearing a Billy Bob jersey a few weeks ago. And I said, where did you get that? I have to get that. And then I thought about it, and he told me, and I thought about it. I'm like, you don't have to live the stereotype, brother. You don't have to do it. So I begged off the Billy Bob jersey, but maybe a Lance Harbor Maybe one of those. What about Johnny Moxon, number four? 800-919-3776. A lot on Russell Westbrook. We get to some more baseball in a bit. We get to some more on Sam Darnold in a bit. Right now, it's our buddy Will in Staten Island. And I say that having never spoken to him or met him in my life. Hello, Will.
How you doing, Carl? How you doing? I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm great.
I'm a little nervous. I'm sorry.
Don't be.
All right. Well, I was listening to you about Westbrook, and you was making a lot of good points. And I'm glad that the ship has sailed on Chris Paul, because he is longer in the tooth than Westbrook, and Westbrook is lightning in a bottle. He's always been his whole career, and not only is he respected in the league more than Chris Paul, I would assume. Because they call him
Big Brody. Oh, I don't think that's true. I think players really respect Chris Paul. They love Chris
really?
Paul. I mean, he's the president of the Players Association, for Pete's sake.
True. All right, that's true. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, another dynamic I'm thinking is, like, maybe Westbrook wants to come to the Knicks to do what Kevin Durant was supposed to do, to bring the excitement back. Like, Kevin Durant shunned us and went to Brooklyn, and the rumor was him coming here. And, you know, he was going to do what Westbrook can do as a point guard also. And I'm thinking maybe Harden wants to go to Brooklyn just to stick it to Westbrook. You know what I mean, too? Because he's rumored to go to the Knicks and he will revitalize all the excitement. I could see him dunking hard and screaming into the sky in the garden. That was, oh, my goodness. And then, but I would think, like, they had a little falling out. So Harden probably wants to go to Brooklyn, not just to make them a powerhouse, because that's what that would be, but to stick it to Westbrook also, you know what I mean? To be right across the river.
Yeah,
and
I don't think that's why he wants to do it. I don't think that's why he wants to come here. Thanks for the call, Will. Appreciate you checking in. Don't let it be the last time. But what I do think is that Harden wants to come here to the easiest route to a championship. Now, I have said this before, and we will talk about it extensively. I wouldn't go get Harden if I were the Nets. I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. Not remotely. And I know what I'm saying there. Because, honestly, James Harden is an amazing player. And you think about the possibilities of having him and Durant and Kyrie on the floor at the same time. God, that would be off the charts, wouldn't it? Well, in theory, it would be. But you're talking about three incredibly volatile personalities in different ways. Who is honestly in that group taking the back seat? Durant is the second best player in the league, maybe the best player in the league right now. Kyrie Irving, to say that he could be volatile would be underselling it. And then you've got Harden, who has run two other guys out of town, two other stars out of town, and now potentially a third that Westbrook doesn't want to play with him. He did it to Chris Paul, who people love. And he did it to Dwight Howard back when he was closer to his prime. So I think that has while it has an incredible talent potential, that has an amazing, amazing blow-up potential as well. Combustible doesn't cover what that could be. And think about everything that they have to give up. You're in essence talking about five draft picks. Two of them are swaps, only because you can't trade picks in back-to-back years. First rounders, that is. And you're talking about Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, and Jared Allen. All of that for Harden. No. And apparently the Rockets have said that it's either that Durant or Irving has to be in the deal. Good luck with that. That's not happening. Durant is not going anywhere. Kyrie's not going anywhere. And Harden wants to be here because of a big three. That's all. That's kooky talk. Nick and Astoria's next, 98.7 ESPN. Nicholas, what up?
My buddy Carlin.
Yeah, that's
even
right.
Even though we never spoke.
Exactly. Where are you at in Astoria? Or are you just driving through?
I'm driving to Astoria from work.
I lived in Astoria for 4 years. They were glorious.
I should have been longer. I've been here for about 20.
Yeah, I'd go back. I'd go back in a minute. What's up?
So about Westbrook, I hear all your points.
Okay.
Exciting player, dynamic, push the floor. He'll make this, you know, push the team and get them running. And I feel like that's only good for like 1 year, right? And then year two, if you're trying to get people here, he only has one more year left. And then on third year, he's making like $50 million. So I just don't see how it could work in New York for him. I get all the dynamic and I understand it, but how can you attract people here if you're only going to be good for 1 year?
Well, but I don't know that he's only going to be good for 1 year. Do you think he's all of a sudden going to go in the tank after 1 year? At 33,
no,
he's going to be awful?
Well, we're not going to get anybody else this year, most likely, right? We're going to give up our draft pick. We'll get Westbrook. That's good. And then year two, you're going to
You'll look at it next year. And if this team has improved and it feels like they're one star away, if you've seen from really, really being a playoff contender, not a championship contender, mind you, yet, but a playoff contender, and there's true growth, why wouldn't somebody want to come and play in that situation? If there's good young talent, one guy who's a superstar there already, and, you know, if they made the most out of whatever this eighth pick is, if it's something that, if they didn't have to give it up to get Westbrook, which, by the way, I would still do anyway, you know, then hopefully you start to see a lot more positivity coming from the Garden.
I would assume, and maybe, you know, that they would have to give up that eighth pick, which, you know, I wouldn't want to do. But then in the third year, he's making $50 million. It's going to tie up so much money. So that's the only reason why.
But here's the point. He's not tied up, Nick, for 6 years at $40 million a year. That's not what this is. This is three. This is three. And by the way, at the end of it, in year three, there may be somebody who's willing to take a bad contract if it turns out to be like that. This is not going to crush your franchise for a long time because the Knicks are in a situation where they can afford this player and bring in more. And that's why it's so good. I mean, their cap hasn't been this healthy in years and years and years and years. Nick, thanks for the call. It hasn't been this healthy in forever. Ever. I personally love this idea because it makes them relevant again. There's a reason to watch. And, you know, this is crazy. I could just put it simply like this. For anybody in their right mind that doesn't believe that the Knicks run basketball in this city, and that somehow the Nets are taking over. Think about this. I have talked about James Harden with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving potentially playing together in Brooklyn. I have not gotten one phone call about that. Not one. When I bring up Russell Westbrook to the Knicks, my lines are flooded. I don't care if Jesus is playing for the Nets. They don't care. The Nets are never going to own this town. They may care more this season when things get going, but think about that. Right? We haven't gotten a mention about Harden, a tweet, maybe one, in a response to what we were talking about yesterday with the potential deal and how stupidly one-sided it would be for Houston if the Nets would even consider doing it. There is the possibility the Celtics are talking about the idea that they would try to trade away Hayward and Kemba Walker to get in on the Harden mix. I don't exactly know if they're going to go trade those two and get draft picks and then somehow put together a package to go get Harden. What are they going to be giving away then? What's the first thing that the Rockets are asking for? Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. I mean, what's that package going to look like? I mean, it's going to blow things to smithereens. I don't see where that would work. But apparently they're has been some talk about that. Another guy who covers the Celtics for a long time says the team has no interest in James Harden. And by the way, what is, for Michael said this earlier. It's 100%. What is for Gordon Hayward to decide upon on a $36 million option? Son, take the money. I mean, for Pete's sake, are you out of your mind? Take the money. You know, you shouldn't need an extension, a couple of extra days to talk about that. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. The Westbrook calls continue to roll in. We'll continue on that. We will also get into how the Knicks could be a factor in a potential Celtics trade for Harden. And it's not a bad one, I have to tell you. It might actually benefit them. We'll talk about that in a few. Also on Twitter, at Chris Carlin. That's at Chris Carlin on Twitter. I'm going to make a little confession. When I started in the show tonight, I have a new, I guess you'd call it soundboard, but it's basically an app on my iPad, right? So it's a little way to play the little sounds, little drop, stuff like that. So I take my notebook where I have many, many copious notes written down, and I kind of prop it up in front of me on the iPad. And in the middle of me starting to make a serious point about Jamal Adams, all of a sudden, you know, something
you
from...
just said,
oh, look, it's Billy Madison.
One of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
See? You accidentally hit that button. That kind of thing happens in radio. Then I tried to shut it off, and then what happens? I hit this.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yeah. I needed a good chuckle. ESPN's Tim McMahon has provided that, and I'm not laughing at Tim. I'm laughing at what the Rockets have told him. The Houston Rockets reportedly feel no pressure whatsoever to trade away James Harden or Russell Westbrook, regardless of the superstar's strong desire for fresh starts. What could ever possibly be behind that? Feel no pressure. Please, stop it. Stop it. They are willing to get uncomfortable as training camp opens and the season begins. In other words, for the Rockets, they're trying to salvage any remote possible leverage that they would ever have left anymore. And when you put that out there, it just is like, no, we're in no hurry to trade either one of these guys whatsoever. What are you being ridiculous? Why, you interested? You want to talk about it? Yeah, come on, stop with that crap. We're willing to get uncomfortable, a high-ranking Rocket source told ESPN. Yeah, I'm sure. We'll see about that, please. What a complete and utter, what's the word I'm looking for? Lie. That's just a complete and utter lie from the Rockets. Trying to somehow salvage their ability to have some kind of leverage in this. Stop it. Lonnie in Long Island is back. Lonnie, what happened?
I don't know what happened, sir. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Don't worry, bud.
All right, Chris. My thing is, Westbrook, I love him. If he was 25, I would love to have him. But he's on the downside right now, I think. Well, in a couple of years. I don't want that big contract later when I don't think he's worth it. Now, if you're going to give me Murray from Denver, I'll take him. Or Mitchell from Utah,
that's mighty,
I'll do that.
Yeah,
that,
I tell you what, that's mighty sporty of you to take, you know, young point guards. That would be a great point. I tell you, you're a hell of a guy. You're up for humanitarian of the year.
One other thing.
Come on for a second.
Trevor Lawrence bandwagon.
Hang on a second. On Westbrook, guys, 32, not 36, 3 years, not 12. Okay? It's 3 years, and the Knicks can afford it in their salary cap. It does not hamstring them from doing a damn thing. That's what we all have to get through our heads. This is not a contract that is going to absolutely crush you. You're not re-signing Westbrook for massive money at the end of this deal, unless it's for a year or two, and you're on the doorstep of winning a championship, and you actually think he's part of the solution. Other than that, no. It's you guys are making this out to be a whole lot more than it is because of the cap situation the Knicks are in. It's not that big of a deal. Anyway, go ahead.
Yes. Well, I'm so afraid of it. That's what.
But what are you afraid of? You can't go through life afraid, Lonnie. You can't do it.
I know. But I'm afraid at the end of his, at the end, we're going to be paying money for somebody that's not going to do anything for us.
That's in 3 years, and it's not 5 years. It's 3 years. Three. And then he's gone.
Okay. And one other thing.
Yeah.
I want Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence, please, come to New York.
Listen, thanks for the call, Lonnie. I personally believe that if the Jets have the number one pick and Trevor Lawrence wants to go and pull a I'm not playing for the Jets bit, go nuts. Go nuts. Let's argue it's Jacksonville that has the number two pick or somebody like that. Fine. You want to go make it happen in Jacksonville, Trevor? Have a great time. I'll trade you back to the number two spot. If I'm the Jets, I'm not moving out of the top two spots. That's it. And I don't care if Trevor Lawrence says he doesn't want to play for me. If I'm at the number one pick, if that happens, then I'm going to make sure that Justin Fields does want to play for me. I don't think the Jets are going to be in a situation where either guy is going to try to force their way out and not be there. Hey, at that point, they do have leverage, but I don't think they have leverage enough to not want to be the number one or number two pick in the draft. I just don't see it. And can we also be honest about something? People need to get this whole thing out of their heads about the Jets being a god-awful destination next year. You have a GM in place who traded away Jamal Adams and got a boatload in return for him. How's that look right now? After Jamal's little 15-minute tirade today on the Jets. How's that look? His pass defense is ranked last in the league. Dead last. Jamal couldn't cover me, and they time me with a sundial. Stop. They have a GM who knows what the heck he's doing, and if the owner lets him hire a coach and has the proper structure for the Jets of a coach reporting to a GM, reporting to an owner, then we're cooking with some gas. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't become about the same old storylines with the Jets ruining a quarterback. No. It's about the wrong people being here when the quarterback got here. If the Jets hire the right coach and it's attractive enough to Trevor Lawrence or to Justin Fields, they'll be here. And as long as they end up with one of those two, that's all that matters. Because Fields is a very close 1A, people. Very, very close. Started the show with this, and I want to come back to it because it was upsetting and angering on a couple of fronts, and that's Jamal Adams. Now, if you missed it, Jamal went on a podcast today with Patrick Peterson and Bryant McFadden, the former cornerback, that was called All Things Covered. And Jamal, naturally, as he does, was talking about his time in New York. Now, I go back to when he got traded. And I honestly felt like, and I don't know why I felt this way, but maybe it would come up once, that we wouldn't be spending a lot of time talking about Jamal. But it's happened like three times now since he got traded. And today was the worst of all of it. Because he went on a 13-minute bizarre dissertation to describe exactly everything that was wrong with his time in New York and how bad it got. I want you to take a listen to 1 minute clip of what he had to say out of the entire 13 minutes. And this was upsetting and aggravating at the same time.
Take Man, we finished 7-9, right? And we came into the locker room. Everybody was happy, clapping it up. And it was just like, what do I really want? Can I stand this again? Because, bro, I fought depression in New York, bro. And I'm manning up.
Really?
I fought depression, bro.
Wow.
Oh, but there was so many, there's been so many times to where I've came home after a loss, a tough loss, and just sat in my room, bro, in the dark. No phone, no TV. And Pops will walk in and be like, hey, man, you all right? He hated to see me like that. It killed my Pops so much, come to find out. He was calling my agent at the time and saying, hey, man, I don't like seeing my son like this. I need him out of this situation. So it got so bad to where it took a toll on my life outside of football, to where I had to make a move. I had to get out there because I knew what I wanted, and I wanted to win. It was like, man, they do not want to win.
Couple of things. Granted, this is a very small sample of 13 minutes, and I didn't want anything to be lost in context, so I'll explain a couple of other things that Jamal had to say as well. Number one, you could easily go in here on Jamal using the word depression and having a complete lack of understanding what depression is versus what he was dealing with. I'm somebody that has dealt with depression and some form of mental illness, as millions of Americans have. My family has. My wife's family has. Many, many, many people I know deal with it. When you say you're dealing with depression, and you more than insinuate that a trade lifted your depression, you are not dealing with depression. There is a massive difference between depression and the normal blues that people feel every once in a while. Feeling sad. Like, that's called being human. It's a human emotion. And I don't want to get into a whole cancel culture thing here on Jamal. I'm not going to do that. Because I do think it was just a misunderstanding of what he was saying, or a misspeaking, because there's not a great understanding of depression and mental illness in this country. So I won't hold that against him. I would just say, don't use the word depression there. You were not depressed. Depression is not solved by a bag of money or a trade to the Seahawks. That's not depression. Depression is when you not only question yourself, but everything in your life, things going on around you, and how your mind affects everything that you deal with every day. That's what depression is. Just go look it up. There's a big difference between depression and sadness. And I found that angering as someone that has dealt with it, but okay. Listen, I have no question in my mind that he did not mean it to be insulting to that community, to the community of people dealing with that, but it is insulting, to be clear. But again, all right, misunderstanding. It happened. Secondly, Jamal Adams is the only one talking about this anymore. The Jets, no other players, everybody has moved on. But this is now three times that he has gone back to take shots at the situation. And this is after the infamous article with all of his quotes to the credentialist Manish Mehta of the Daily News, where he went off just to try to get out of town, and he basically admitted that today. Jamal says at numerous times it was about winning, and he also says in numerous times, well, it was, you know, listen, if we weren't going to win, I wanted to at least get paid on three occasions. Then blame the Jets for bringing up the idea of a long-term extension to begin with, and then not following through on it. Well, if I'm going to be here and be the franchise player of a bad team, at least let me get paid for that. See, that's not about winning. As you continue to say, I don't think that phrase means what you think it means. Winning is actually winning games. I don't begrudge any NFL player ever getting every last dollar that they can, because it is such an incredibly physical sport, and your career could end at any second, quite literally. But just don't go talking about how getting paid wasn't that important, and then a minute later say, but at least I should get paid for that. It's beyond hypocritical, and it sounds stupid. Then he continues to go out of his way to rip the franchise, and how his agent was told after the trade by Joe Douglas that they were not going to pay him until 2022 anyway. That did not happen. I guarantee you that did not happen. Because if you're Joe Douglas, what point is there for you to tell an agent that we weren't going to pay your guy anyway? But yet he called and wanted to make sure that Jamal wanted to be traded when he got a deal in place. Wanted to make sure, you sure you want to go down this road? You sure you want to do this? But then told him we weren't going to pay him anyway. What good GM would do that with an agent that he's almost certainly going to have to deal with on another player at some point? He wouldn't. I'm starting to think Jamal's agent, not the sharpest tool in the shed, because throughout a lot of this, he handled himself pretty poorly and might have been advising Jamal pretty badly. And in the midst of this 13-minute mess of a soliloquy, Jamal continued to just talk about the utter disrespect that he was shown. I understand some people need that in their mind for motivation. For Pete's sake, look at Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan needed it in the worst way, and he could find the smallest bit of disrespect in anything in George Karl possibly not seeing him at a restaurant and not saying hello, and he took that personally. Okay, some people are motivated by that. I guess with Jamal at this point, I would argue you got everything you wanted out of this. You got traded. Eventually here, I'm assuming somebody will pay you, although if they look at the numbers this year, I have no idea why. The Seahawks defense is infinitely worse with you on it. They are dead last in pass defense in the entire NFL. You want to use the box safety argument on it with me? Go ahead. He's got his couple of sacks. The defense is worse. The team is worse. They're 6-3, but nobody feels good about where they're headed right now. And let me ask you a question. Do you think John Schneider would make that trade again if given the opportunity at a do-over? Pretty sure he wouldn't. So let's sum up, shall we? Depression is not solved by money or trades to Seattle. Disrespect motivates Jamal Adams to the point where he can't let go of the past, as everybody seemingly has at this point. The Seahawks are worse with him to the tune of 90 yards per game passing over last season. They're giving up 90 more yards per game passing than they did a year ago. And they weren't even that great a year ago. I have seen him on more than one occasion get smoked like a cheap cigar out on the field. He is currently rated the 57th best safety in the NFL this year. There are 64 starting safeties in the league. Jamal is rated 57th. And yet, he's still talking. He's still talking and talking and talking and talking. And when I say monologue or soliloquy about that 13 to 15 minute chat today, it wasn't a chat. He went on and on and on and on. And Bryant McFadden or Patrick Peterson couldn't have stopped him if they wanted to. Not that they would want to. You know, you might think it's a little bit hypocritical of me to be on Jamal for this, because it's what made Jamal a great guest when he was a weekly guest on our other show at the other place. I looked forward to it every week because I knew at least he was going to be honest with his feelings. Now you're just becoming more and more and more of a problem for yourself when you don't shut up. Jamal can't shut up, can't let go of the past, and when you can't let go of the past, you can't move forward. That is your problem, Jamal. Everybody else here is looking forward to spending those draft picks that the Jets got for you.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.